This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 83. This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sapath from Australia. Coming up in the show, Gary Palmer answers your questions. And we catch up with David in his mid-season. Well, David, we have two games that you've had to catch up on. We couldn't talk about your game last week because of technical difficulties. But I understand, David, that your game last week was called off. So it's actually just really one game to talk about. What was that, David?
Yeah, the week before last, we had torrential rain, unfortunately. And although it was dry, quite dry in the morning, it rained again in the afternoon. So we were abandoned that ball. Bowled. So everybody went home a little bit underwhelmed. Last Saturday, we did get a full game. It was nice weather. It was a little bit cloudy, but the sun was out. And we managed to pull off a rather good victory.
So how did the game go, David? Did your team play to its potential?
Yes, we had a little bit of a disaster. We got lost en route. So me and my spinner managed to turn up only 5 minutes before the start of play, which means that one of the senior players went and tossed up.
Yeah.
Also, we had two players arriving late because they were literally getting off the plane from their summer holidays, getting in a car and dashing to the ground with borrowed equipment and all the rest of it. So we started with a very low number of fielders and missing a bowler. And so it wasn't the best of starts. It was a bit of a rush to get everything, you know, get everything done on time. But we lost the toss and were asked to field, of course. And yeah. So it was a bit of a disaster to start with. And we did get quite a pasting for the first few overs. The openers put on 100 stand in about 20 overs, and I was looking around. There were loads of gaps in the field, and we only had four bowlers there, which is okay. You know, that's not too bad. But you know, one of the bowlers is a bit of a part timer, so we really only had three bowlers. So I had to sort of keep my openers going because you know I wanted to get them to get through as many overs as possible. And at one stage, we were thinking, you know, what are we going to be chasing here? You know, are they going to bat for 50 overs and score 250, 270, 290, 300? You know, what are we going to be chasing here? Then our two latecomers arrived, one of them being a first team player, a normally first team bowler, who, because he was coming back from holiday and we weren't sure whether he's going to make it on time for the first team game, we decided to put him second team. So he arrived, took a couple of overs to have a little run around the outfield and get himself, you know, sorted.
Yeah.
And then came on and bowled 15 overs straight through and bowled very, very tightly and turned the game around. And then the other main bowler that we had, who'd been there all along, came on and took 7 for 33 and turned us around. So their openers between them got, well, the openers got 75 and 66.
Yeah.
And then the whole rest of the team, only one of them got into double figures. And there were five ducks.
Yeah,
and we were thinking at one point, you know, what are we going to be chasing here? 250 minimum. We bowled them out for 172. So yet again, we bowled a side out. So we're doing very well bowling sides out at the moment.
That's impressive.
Our weakness has always been with the batting. We haven't really had anyone who's shored the batting up and allowed us to chase scores down or set decent totals. But but it was a turnaround. The batsman who came on holiday obviously had a very enjoyable holiday. He had a lovely tan, and he went out over the batting and scored a very composed 92. And we knocked off the 172 runs required for just one wicket down.
Oh, it's not bad. Sounds like a fairly easy day at the office for you, David, as captain, except for the start. But, your batsman putting it in and your bowlers towards the end coming through, you must have felt fairly satisfied at the end.
Yeah, captaincy is pretty easy. When your bowlers are bowling well, you know, you can set a field. When your batsmen are scoring the runs, then you don't have to worry about the batting order. It all becomes very easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's still a few challenges. I mean, trying to get the field right when you're two men down and, it's getting pasted all around the park. But in fact, to be fair, one of the openers who was doing most of the hitting, he wasn't pasting it all around the park. He was hitting everything through sort of gully and point region.
Yeah.
So at one point we had two gullies, a deep point, and a wide third man. And he was still managing to get it through the gap and hit it for four. So one of those older guys, I don't know how old he was, he must have been in his 40s at least, mid to late 40s, I'd say. And he was just one of those batsmen who knows his game to such precision that, he can still, even though you've got four fielders in a very small area, he can still find the gap between them. But we got there in the end, and when your fourth bowler, your second change bowler, comes on and takes 7 for 33, then captaincy becomes a very easy proposition. You just put loads of close fielders in and watch him run through the middle order.
Yeah. Well, David, it's sort of approaching, if not already, into your mid-season. How are you guys looking at the table? I mean, you've had a few really good wins. You should be sitting pretty on the table.
Well, it's pretty tight at the top. After six games, remember we've lost two. So after six games, we've won three, lost two, and one's been abandoned, and we're sitting in fourth position.
Well, I think it's important, David, especially at the mid-season mark, to still be in the hunt for the championship, because especially for our team at the mid-season mark, we were coming first, but after that mark, I think every other team stepped it up, whereas we still stayed at our same intensity.
Mm.
So I think it's important that your team especially, that if you guys can try, I bet you'll be looking to push your team even further to try and get that intensity up, get all their performances and get the team to click together so that you actually are peaking towards the end of the season.
Yeah, always difficult, especially, with a side which changes quite a lot, team players coming out on the first team and availability always being an issue. There's always someone dropping out, so it's hard to have a consistent side. But then I would imagine all teams in this division have that kind of problem. But it's nice to be in a slightly stronger league. That's last year we won the league pretty easily. We didn't have any.
Yeah.
There's only one other side who were in it with us. And also what's good to see is that not many people are drawing games this season. So there's obviously something going on there with teams, being a lot more positive than, because in previous years there's been a lot of draws.
But
this year, whether there's a big gap between the top half and the bottom half or something, I don't know. But teams aren't really drawing. I'm just having a look now. There's only been one draw in all games.
Yeah. Could you put that down to the captains having a more aggressive and positive approach, or would you say it's something to do with like the pitches or the weather or something like that?
I hope it's a positive approach from captains.
Early
season, you tend to have result pitches in this country.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean they're bad pitches. Sometimes you do get bad pitches. But early season, people still getting themselves into form. Maybe the pitch is a little bit more conducive to the bowling. Conditions are a bit more conducive to bowling. So sides are getting bowled out. So you're going to get more victories. Yeah. But hopefully, it's also that teams are... teams are looking to, go for the win and risk losing in order to go for the win. I think in recent years, it's been a common idea that you should make sure that you are in a completely unlosable position before you try and win. If you bat first, you go out and try and score 280 in your 50 overs, something, stupid, 300. Which certainly in our games, you don't see that. 200 is a good score.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but in recent times, I think that people are going away from that. I'm hoping that people are going away from that anyway. People are prepared to put in a declaration a little bit earlier than maybe they normally would, and they're backing their bowlers to bowl sides out, which I think that's important. Because you don't want to play a game where there's nothing more boring in English or British club cricket than a game where where the first side bats first. They bat their full 50 overs. They score 280 for three or something ridiculous like that. And then the other side just do not go for it. You know, they just they just end up on 120 for four. Oh, 50 overs, and it's boring. It's so boring to play in those games. How much more interesting would the game be if you declare, you know, if you were smacking it all over the place and you declared five overs early and maybe 40 or 50 runs less, you know, if you're giving it the long handle at the end. And then the opposition think they've done it too, they've declared too early here. They don't rate us. We're going to go for this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know it's a dramatic last over finish. You know where the number 11 batsman, you know, is facing the last ball, four runs to win, one wicket to win for the opposition. You know what an exciting way to spend an afternoon. Much more interesting than watching someone block out 50 overs.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what attracts younger kids, if not every other player, to the game as well. They'd prefer to be in those closer games than to watch someone pile up 300 on them and then they'd have to sort of block the entire day out. So it's good for the game as well if captains are more positive and players in general as well are more positive. Let's get into the questions, David. We have Gary Palmer with us to help us out this week. Welcome to the question section for this week, and this week our guest coach is Gary Palmer. Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. But Gary, our first question is from George, and he says, I've always had a poor throwing arm, and despite working on my shoulders and arms in the gym, it has not gotten any better. When I have to throw in from the boundary, I invariably only manage to get into the keeper after two or three bounces, and occasionally get pain in my elbow after repeated throws. I've read a few tips along the lines of keeping your feet pointed forwards and keeping your elbow above the level of your shoulder, but despite practicing, I'm not getting any improvements. What would you recommend as your top tips, and could it be anything to do with wrist position or wrist flick? I wonder, as I'm a leggy, but notice that most fast bowlers have good arms. Thanks very much. So what do you reckon, guys? What should George do to help his throwing arm?
Well, it sounds like he's trying to do the right things by going to the gym and working on his strength and his flexibility and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, like all things, if he had a decent technique, that would probably help a hell of a lot. That would probably be the key thing. So, you know, does he crow hop before he releases the ball from the boundary, or does he just pick it up one stride and throw? Because what he should be doing, he's doing a crow hop, but when he does his crow hop, his right foot, rather than go behind his left foot like we all used to do, his right foot should go in front of his left foot. So by the time his front foot lands again, everything he is in is a nice straight line to the target, and he should get more sort of body and power into it then, and also accuracy because he's lined up nicely. Obviously, we all know you've got to point your front arm or get your front elbow up there. Your right elbow needs to be above your shoulder, and I expect he knows all these things, but I would imagine it's got something to do with how does he crow hop? Does he get his feet round the correct way? And has he got some momentum going into that crow hop? Has he got a decent stride to actually release the ball?
It's what I find. It's one of those things that if you don't pick up sort of from an early age, then you're always playing catch up as the older you get. You know, it's if you don't throw a lot when you're younger, you kind of have to miss out a bit, and you can never quite make up for the fact that you've missed out on it.
I agree. One thing I didn't say there is the other thing is if he can get his hips forward of his right elbow, if he's throwing with his right hand, that would help him get a bit more momentum and power into the throw as well. Sometimes people's elbows get through before their bases are sort of set to throw. So he's got to leave that elbow behind, so it's like winding up like a spring, get his hips forward, which is why crossing that right foot over the left foot would help him do that. So that's something else he could try and do. But you've hit the nail on the head there. you need to sort of be able to do these things correctly from a young age. But they can be taught.
And the other thing I would say is, you mentioned, just briefly mentioned the gym there. It's important to know what kind of training to do in the gym as well. So it's not just a matter of going to the gym and working on each machine and hoping that's going to magically improve. You have to do the kind of stuff that improves your elastic power, if you like, your throwing power. So, you know, it's no good going on the shoulder press machine, for example, and thinking, well, I've strengthened my shoulders, therefore I'll be able to throw faster, because strength is one small part of it, but it's not, it's more about how quickly you can move your muscles. So stretching, making sure that you've got plenty of flexibility around the joint, and also doing things like, it's a bit of an old-fashioned thing, but it's coming back into vogue now, is getting a medicine ball and throwing a medicine ball. Not throwing it like a cricket ball, but throwing it more, more like, like a rugby pass or something like that. Because that's just, if you've got a light enough 1 or 2 kilogram one or something like that, that's teaching your body to elastically move very, very quickly through space. So, you're not going to make up for having a poor technique by doing something like that. But if you've got a good technique, then that extra power that your muscles are generating is going to help as well. So, some people just don't have a good throw, but there are things, as you say, Gary, there are things you can do.
But that shoulder joint, again, is something, there are, not like you're saying, not just lifting weights, but mobilizing that shoulder joint and getting full range of movement and getting all the little muscles and ligaments around there stronger and more flexible. And you can do that by on one of those big balls, can't you? Walking out with your hands on it and then moving back the other way. So you're trying to balance while you're moving. So it's getting to all the muscles and tendons around the joint.
Thanks, guys. Our next question is from Maddie. My question to you is, how can one come out of a bad performance? I mean, I play back-to-back matches, one on Saturday and one on Sunday, the club matches. And when I don't perform well on Saturday, it's very demoralizing and it leaves me completely low on confidence. So I would like to know how I can get out of this negative frame of mind, whether it's batting or bowling. So guys, how would you help Maddie?
Well, it's first of all, you've got to identify why it's happening. So you probably want to have a look at your technique first. And if you find your technique's pretty good, then you probably want to analyze your shot selection, and your patience. And are you leaving the ball outside off stump or playing at ones that you shouldn't? If you're doing all those things really well, then it's obviously something to do with your self-belief and your confidence. And, you say to people, if you have a poor trot of scores, say four low scores, you don't know that the next knock, no matter how low you're feeling, you don't know that next knock might be the one you get your 100. So if you keep thinking like that, it should keep you interested and motivated. But you mustn't, you mustn't get down about it and focus on what's been going wrong. You've got to start focusing on what you want to do to improve and get better. And what do you want your next score to be, rather than the negative. And if you go in the nets and just do some throwdowns and hit the ball out the middle of the bat and you feel good about yourself doing that, walk away and think, great, I feel in great nick. It's just a matter of time. And we all go through bad runs of form or we don't get runs. And you just got to see it through and just keep going through that difficult period. The runs will come. If you put the hard work in and the time in the winter and you're doing all the right things, it could be a case of you just having some bad luck. You've just had two Jaffers bowled at you that would have got anyone out. You've just got to keep going. It's too easy to go, oh, I'm not doing very well. If you're down in the dumps and a bit depressed about life, you've got no chance of getting out of that low run of form quickly. You've got to be upbeat and really, really positive. That's the only way to be. Try and visualize some games when you were playing well. What did you do well? Try and recap on those positive performances or reconnect with those positive performances. Just think everything positive. Wipe the negative out, bin it, well, as they say, flush it down the toilet, and your form should come back.
The comment about keeping going is a good one. I think probably it's a hallmark of a decent player is someone who can,
definitely,
when they don't fancy it, when it's all gone horribly wrong and then you've got to go and bat again the next day, you the ability to steel yourself and say, right, I'm gonna get through this. I'm just going to get through the next ball, you know, because sometimes is all it takes is one ball, isn't it? You hit one out of the middle through mid off, and suddenly everything's back to the way it was, and you think, what was I worried about before? Yeah. This bowling easy. The sun's out. I'm enjoying batting. What was I worried about in the first place? So
I couldn't agree more.
It can change that quickly, or sometimes it can go on for weeks. But you're not gonna get any better by not playing or going to do something else instead. The only way you're gonna get out of that rut is to keep doing it one ball at a time until you get to that ball which makes the difference.
I think you've got to also keep in touch with the processes. Stay focused with the processes of what you need to do. Sometimes when you're out of nick, you go out in the middle and you're not really thinking about the processes. You're still thinking, I'm not playing very well, I hope I get some runs, and all that's too vague. You need to stay focused in on the processes of what you need to do. And a lot of times when people are out of form, they go out in the middle and they think about their head, their elbow, their foot, their this, their that. And with all those things going on in their head, the intensity of focus on the key thing, which is the ball, is totally sort of deflated. It's not there in the intensity that it should be. So, again, something else that would be positive for this particular person would be to go out there and just watch the ball really intensely, try and be relaxed, and just think of where you're going to score your first run. Or what's the game plan? How many runs are we looking to get here? How many and over? And channel your thoughts into your processes.
Yeah, and we've all been there with everybody. It doesn't matter what level you've played. If you've had any success and then that's followed by a period of failure, then there's some days where you just don't want to even think about cricket, let alone play cricket. You know, even the club player who's, you know, plays third 11 club cricket has said to themselves, you know, thrown the bat in the bag and gone, that's it, I'm selling, I'm putting this on eBay tomorrow, I'm never playing another game in my life. The challenge there is to recover from that and say to yourself, well, you know, it's all gone wrong today, it might all go right tomorrow.
Yeah, or it's going to go right tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, guys. Our last question is from Vipin, and he says, please tell me some techniques to be a hitter. By hitter, I mean a hitter who can play a shorter ball and tries to hit boundaries, especially at the end of an innings. Do you need to be big and strong? Well, David and Gary, does Vipin need to be big and strong to be a hitter?
It helps, but it's not the be-all and end-all. I think if you want to be a hitter at the end of the game, you have to have a very good technique. And I think you have to be somebody who can hit length balls down the ground for four or six. And if that length ball is just a little bit shorter, so it's now back of a length, you need to be able to collapse that elbow slightly and pick the ball up over mid-wicket square leg, or even hook it, or if it's wide above stump, cut it. Clearing the front leg is something that's really helpful because it opens you up slightly. Too often when people try to hit down the ground and they get all excited, they try to pick the bat, hit the ball too hard, they pick the bat up and it goes behind them and the front shoulder closes. Once the front shoulder closes, you're going to swing the bat like a golfer. So I would say stand up, have a plan in your head that the length ball or the one back of a length is the one that you're going to attack, and look to hit it straight first. If it's a bit shorter, pick it up over the leg side. If it's a bit wider on the offside, throw the bat at it. You've got to have sort of a number of shots that you could probably play to that one length or line of ball, at least two. But technique, again, is very important because the better the technique, the more options you've got to hit that ball in different areas. If you just sort of stick your leg down the wicket and hit across the line, yes, you might hit a couple of huge sixes, but it's all going to be very inconsistent, and that's what you don't want when you get put into a number of positions in a match where you could win the game for the lads. You need to be more consistent rather than hit and miss, hope for the best. And I would say, you know, monitoring or thinking about when you're going to do it, getting your backswing aligned right over off stump and finishing with the toe of the back going where you want that ball to go if you're hitting straight, but also think tempo of swing. So you're just stroking it, timing it. And sometimes when you think about hitting the ball, I say to some lads, look to sort of hit the ball for sort of one bounce four. Generally, if you do that, you swing the bat in a nice controlled way and it comes out the middle of the bat and flies over the boundary for six. So don't try and hit it too hard. Key to get the old back lift out over off stump, and key to hold the toe of the bat going where the ball's gone. High elbow, high hands. You need a decent technique to hit shots in the sort of latter part of a game when someone's bowling, you know, a good sort of length at you. I mean, there are other options where you could walk across your stump. So before the ball's bowled, you go back and across. Your front foot lands, so you're like set up to play an on drive. But it's probably now going to be to a ball on sort of off stump, just outside, and you can hit that straight, or you can drop your elbow and bring your bottom hand in slightly and pick it up over mid wicket. But you all these things need to be practiced in the nets. You can't just, you know, play all the proper shots in the net, then get into a game and expect to boss it straight back over the bowler's head for six regularly. You need to actually practice doing that. The more you practice it, the more you get the feel of it, the better shapes you get into, the more confident you get. So when your time comes in the match to recreate that same game plan in the middle, like you've been there before, you know exactly what to do, and the chances are it will come off. And still keep the top hands in control for as long as possible. I think it's a bit of a... I don't think it's a good thing to say to a young player when you're hitting down the ground, get that bottom hand into the shot. We all know it's bound to come in a little bit, but the less said about the bottom hand, the better. Because if you tell somebody to get the bottom hand in, 9 times out of 10, they'll get it in too much. They'll lose their shape. Yes, when the ball's at middle and leg, and you keep your elbow up and you're trying to pick it up over mid-wicket, the bottom hand is going to come into the shot as you hit the ball with sort of a topspin action, using the arms and the hands to just flick it off the face of the bat. But again, that's not really to talk about the bottom hand. I think that happens naturally, but the key thing is to keep that top hand always in control, because that is your, that's your steering wheel. That's your guidance of where you want to hit the ball, on what angle. That left hand or left elbow determines that. So that bottom hand doesn't really want to be more powerful, or so powerful that you lose the shape of your left elbow, because that is key. And I would advocate being more open than more closed when you're trying to attack the bowling. Slightly more open with your shoulders. And this is where any batters that use the back and across trigger movement, to get after it, you'd probably just go back and across, just go a bit further in the crease. But as soon as you make that movement, it opens you up slightly and puts you in an ideal position to attack the ball down the ground in the V, or slightly square the wicket, extra cover, mid-wicket square leg. If you trigger forward, or you do that back forward land before the ball's bowled, you're in an awful position to hit down the ground. You can only hit square of the wicket. So those are some things worth sort of thinking about.
Some critics might say, or not critics perhaps, but people who are not, don't agree with that theory, you might say, well, if you know, if the mid on and the mid off are back, you've got someone out a deep mid wicket, it would be difficult to score boundaries in those areas, and you'd have to come up with some other shots. Would you agree with that, or can you control it enough with the top hand to be able to put it in the gaps between those fielders, even if they're on the boundary?
No, I think you could put it either between those fielders, or back yourself to smack it straight back over the head for six. So it doesn't matter where they are. But if you're sort of now going along the lines of the Duchon and a reverse sweep and the paddle, I think those shots are... If I was going to take that much of a risk, I'd want to know that I can get at least six or four for my shot, not a two or a single. And I think a batter standing there, thinking about swinging the bat straight and hitting mid-on, mid-off, hook, cut, to act, that's quite a lot to have in your head anyway at that stage of the game, but you've got to have it there. But to have another three or four shots where you're swinging the bat in a totally different plane and angle, I just think it's too much to have going on in your head. You're either going to do down the ground, or you're going to be one of these people that can't hit down the ground, or then maybe then you do the Duchon and the reverse sweep and the paddle. But, you know, when you're looking to get runs, you have to take chances. And I think it's a better, a lower risk chance to hit it. Well, here's one for you. Mid on and mid off quite wide. There is no fielder directly behind the bowler generally. So why not manoeuvre your body to smack the ball straight back over the bowler's head, whether it's with a straight bat or a flat bat, or just, you know, hit it between long off and deep extra cover, or long on and deep mid-wicket. I mean, if I told a batter, see if you can hit those fielders 6 out of 6 times in a practice, they'd probably only hit them once. So, you know, law of averages, you might as well hit down the ground and try and, you know, dissect them or hit it over the top. And sometimes you may need to manoeuvre your body in the crease to do that. So if I was going to play a straight drive down the ground and I decided, well, actually, the next length ball I want to hit between mid-on, deep mid-on and deep mid-wicket, I might walk across the crease and align my body so I'm literally playing a straight line from my backswing to target area. And as the ball comes down, I just swing about in a straight line, change the angle and hit the gap. And the other way is to back away, isn't it? And try and do it like that. But, you know, you look at Ian Botham. You know, I've been in the same team, watched him bat loads of times. And he just used to do it, keep it really simple. If it's pitched up, it's going out the ground, straight back over the bowler's head. If it's short, I'm hooking it or picking it up over square leg. It's on the leg side. It's offside, I'm going to cut it. He didn't need to worry about all the fancy shots. And if he was playing now, and same with Viv Richards, neither of those two would play all these sort of trendy shots that players are playing today. They would just smack the ball down the ground, keep it quite simple, do it with pretty good technique, and they'd get millions. They wouldn't need to invent shots.
You mentioned a line in your body there. When would you make that movement? Would that have to be a premeditated movement as the bowler is just entering his delivery stride?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking last 5 overs of match and you really do need to get after it, you've got an idea where the bowler, the line he's bowling, you think, well, this bowler's bowling maybe in it my pad, so I'm going to just get inside it before he lets go of it, so back and across and turn that into a ball that's down the leg side and pick it up for 6. I think just before he lets go, you've got to go back and across or on all 3 with the plan in your mind that if it's a length, it's going out the ground for 6. Depending on the line he bowls, depends on the line I'm going to hit it. That's the sort of processes you've got to have in your head. And if it's back of a length, you know, I've still gone back and across early before the ball's bowled. If it's back of a length and it's between sort of middle and off and the leg side, I'm going to pull that or pick it up over square leg. And if it's wide of my off stump, then I'm going to slash it through point or somewhere on the off side.
One thing I've noticed when we're practicing with more senior players is that when they do practice this kind of thing, especially with a bowling machine, the bowling machine is up at a higher pace than they'd be facing in a match. We're talking about, say, a senior club cricketer. So you've got, maybe your bowlers are bowling at 60, 65, maybe 70 miles an hour, but it's not going to get a lot quicker than that. They've got the machine maybe up in the high 70s because the speed's been gradually going up during the session, and then they practice some hitting at the end. And then when they get out into the middle, they are they're not able to use the pace of the ball anymore because, you know, maybe the club bowler is bowling, you know, 5 or 10 miles an hour slower than they've practiced it. So would you say that, you know, it's important to make sure that you match the practice with what's going to be happening in the middle?
Most definitely. The more detailed you can make your practice, the better your performance will be on the day when you're faced with a difficult situation. But I always believe that if you really wanted to challenge a batter, you would have the ball sort of on a length, back of a length, at maybe 60. And if the ball's swinging, you can't just sort of swing the bat through as fast as you can and hope for the best. Because if that little bit slower and it is swinging, it should make you just be a little bit more cautious and control your shot and hold your shape, because you won't be able to hit that ball successfully unless you do. And you need to have the ball, a series of balls swinging away at that pace, going from leg stump through to outside off stump, and then you need to have it swinging in at that pace. And the other thing is, you talked about the machine bowling quick. How many people put the machine on slow off spin and say, OK, I'm bowling outside off stump, turning it square on a length, let's practice hitting that. And I bet 9 out of 10 club players will try and sweep it, whereas why not come down the wicket in a pretty much chassis in a straight line, and if the ball pitches outside or sort of outside off stump, by the time it's turned, just hit it straight back over the bowler's head or mid-on and practice doing that. And again, practice it over the wicket and around the wicket, and also practice the left armour and doing exactly the same sorts of things to the left arm spinner. Do the straight shots, find out which ones work most successfully for you. So when you're in that sort of middle part of the game where you want to be a little bit cautious, not too many men left in the dressing room, you've got to score runs, but you don't want to throw it away, then you would tend to just hit the ball in the area that you know you're good at hitting a six to that particular bowler. But then as it comes to the end of the game, then maybe you practice hitting every single one, because the more you practice it, the more successful you're going to get at it. But the more you can change, just as you said, the different scenarios in practice, the more knowledge you're going to have and awareness when you're out there in a match and you've got to deliver the goods. But it's no good just putting the machine, to be honest, if you put the machine up on, I don't know, 75 on a length, it's quite easy to smack it straight back over the bowler's head, because all the hard work's done for you. The ball's coming on so quick, back lift up, get to the boom, easy. It's when you've got to wait, watch the ball swing, hold your shape. And when you're trying to hit balls that are back of a length, the one thing you do have to do is wait for it. Just delay the shot a little bit and hold your shape. And go for the straight option first. And if you find it's a little bit too short, like I said earlier, then you improvise, collapse your elbow and pull the shot slightly wider. But you must practice it. There are a lot of players out there today and coaches that are obsessed with getting your shoulder at the ball. You've got to get your shoulder at the ball. Now, from personal experience, every time I've had a player who's tipping to the offside or playing around the front pad or finding it very hard to hit the length ball for six down the ground, 9 out of 10 times, these are people that stand too sideways, or once they pick their bat up, they're trying to get their shoulder at the ball. I can't emphasise enough how important it is to push your head at the ball, especially when the ball's in at middle and on the leg stump. Because if your head goes at the ball, your shoulder gets slightly out of the way, your head's directly above your front foot, so you're well balanced, and it's so much easier to play straight, defending, driving, and also hitting boundaries. So be aware of, don't get too sideways on. Because even when the ball's pitched on off stump, if you push your head at the ball and your foot goes and your body turns, your shoulder's going to go a little bit anyway. But if you turn it too much, the ball tends to go past the front foot and you hit it more with the bottom hand and it squirts off through point. And it's not always a clean hit, and you only have that one option. If you turn your shoulder slightly, and it's because you've got your head at the ball, you've got a wider angle or range of areas to play that ball with a nice straight bat on the offside. So really, really, really important, head at the ball. And the other thing is, when you do drive the ball down the ground, your back heel, if you're playing both off straight and on drive, must be off the ground. So if your back heel's in the air, that means that you really have done a good job in getting your head forward. And the further you get your head forward, the more that allows you to wait for the ball, because you've got a bit of space and time to play with that in front of you. And it's so much easier to hit the ball down the ground, because you've created a much bigger hitting zone. So open up slightly. Make sure the back heel's off the ground when you play your drives and your defence for that matter. And very fine tuning now. When the ball is straight and on middle and leg line, you don't want the inside of your toe on the floor. You want to let that back leg or that back heel just come round a bit so it lines up more with your front foot. And if you want to try this, stand at home, step forward, play a straight drive, and if your heel is too sideways, get someone to just go behind you, lift it and turn it, and see where your head goes and your balance goes after they turned it. I think you'll find you're in a perfect position.
Thanks, guys, for your time. And as usual, we have our pitch vision competition. David, a few really good questions. Who do you think takes away this week's free course from Pitch Vision Academy?
It's a tough one this week. Let's give it to Vipin or Vipin. I don't know how you pronounce that, but interesting to hear about what goes into hitting the ball over the boundary, because it's not necessarily what you think it might be. So interesting question, and gave Gary and I something good to talk about.
Yeah, great question, Vipin. And all he had to do, guys, was send in his question to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And all he had to do was put podcast competition in the title, and he's walking away with a Pitch Vision Academy course. So that's all you have to do. Email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Email your question in with podcast competition in the title. And you can also get more information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. And you can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. So if you want to give yourself a chance to enter the Pitch Vision Academy competition, or you want to get in touch with us, or you have any other questions, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for your time, Gary and David, and thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So this is Kevin Sampath from Sydney, Australia, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.